Hey listeners, if you're working on a manuscript, we'd love to help. Email us about our novel mentorship program at napleswritersworkshop@gmail.com. Welcome to Why Is This Good, a podcast by the Naples Writers Workshop. I'm Christine and I'm here with John. Hey, John.
Hello.
Okay, it's my turn and I picked a story called Roy Spivey by Miranda July. I picked it because I recently read her book, which I think came out like a year or two ago at this point, but it was called All Fours. And it was so interesting. It was like marketed as a book about menopause, but I did not read it that way. I read it as like a Miranda July book where it's all over the place and weird and, you know, to me, it didn't have a central theme. But anyway, a friend of mine read it and was just like completely baffled by it. And I thought it was delightful. And I was like, we should read a Miranda July story. And then you reminded me that we have already read a Miranda July story.
Oh, yes.
And so I reread that one because it's been a while. It was like The Boy from Liam Keane or something. What is it?
Yeah, we weren't sure how to pronounce it. Liam Keane.
So I reread that one. And that one is bizarre. It's truly Miranda July and it's truly bizarre. But this one I feel like is a little more in keeping with what was weird about the book that I just read. Okay, so I have a section I'll read. I read about vacuum cleaners designed to suck insects out of the air. I studied self-heating towel racks and fake rocks that could hide a key. We were beginning our descent. We adjusted our seat backs and tray tables. Roy Spivey suddenly turned to me and said, "Hey." "Hey," I said. "Hey, I had an amazing time with you." "I did too." "I'm going to write down a number, and I want you to guard it with your life, okay? This phone number falls into the wrong hands, and I'll have to get someone to change it, and that is a big headache, okay?" He wrote the number on a page from the SkyMall catalog and ripped it out and pressed it into my palm. "This is my kid's nanny's personal line. The only people who call her on this line are her boyfriend and her son, so she'll always answer it. You'll always get through, and she'll know where I am." I looked at the number. "It's missing a digit. I know. I want you to just memorize the last number, okay?" "Okay, it's 4. We turned our faces to the front of the plane, and Roy Spivey gently took my hand. I was still holding the paper with the number, so he held it with me. I felt warm and simple. Nothing bad could ever happen to me while I was holding hands with him, and when he let go, I would have the number that ended in 4. I'd wanted a number like this my whole life. The plane landed gracefully, like an easily drawn line. He helped me pull my carry-on bag down from the bin. It looked obscenely familiar. My people are going to be waiting for me out there, so I won't be able to say goodbye properly. "I know, that's all right. No, it really isn't. It's a travesty, but I understand. Okay, here's what I'm going to do. Just before I leave the airport, I'm going to come up to you and say, 'Do you work here?' It's okay, I really do understand. No, this is important to me. I'll say, 'Do you work here?' And then you say your part." "What's my part?" "You say, 'No.'" "Okay, and I'll know what you mean. We'll know the secret meaning." "Okay." We looked into each other's eyes in a way that said that nothing else mattered as much as us. I asked myself if I would kill my parents to save his life, a question I had been posing since I was 15. The answer always used to be yes, but in time, all those boys had faded away and my parents were still there. I was now less and less willing to kill them for anyone. In fact, I worried for their health. In this case, however, I had to say yes. Yes, I would.
Another story that reads swiftly.
It does. It really does. It's just a lot of dialogue and then little asides like that. But this reminds me so much of, like, to me, the through line for Miranda July is how fully she commits to an idea. Whether that idea is like falling madly in love with a celebrity on a brief plane, or in the case of the book I just finished, she has this bizarre affair with a man much younger than herself. She's supposed to be going on a road trip and she leaves her husband and her son. And instead of going on the road trip, she goes to the next city and just starts sleeping with a man that works at a tire factory or like a little AutoZone thing. And it's bizarre. And she convinces herself that they're madly in love. And the things that she's willing to do and the feelings she feels are just, she's fully invested. She's fully committed. And I know her originally from her movie, which is You, Me, and Everyone We Know. And I like looked into it afterwards after reading this book again and all this stuff. And it turns out like she didn't just like write that script, and it's not just based on a book of her. She also directed and starred in it. You know, she is fully her characters. When you read a Miranda July story, I don't think it's a bad thing to just like assume that the character is Miranda July. They're just like so fantastical and so similar. But anyway, I thought this one was pretty similar to the book I read, and so I wanted to bring her in.
Yeah, I like that idea of taking an emotional experience in the story, and I will always treat these people as fiction. Even in like what I guess they're not nowadays is calling autofiction, like where you write your own story, your own life, as if it were fiction. But even in stories like that, I'll take this as a character. You're a writer, you're a different person, this is a character. But anyway, for this story and this kind of presentation, you take an emotion that a character is feeling, you just like push it to the extreme. Like you're gonna present it as if it's the biggest emotion that you've ever felt. Like this idea of would I kill my parents, like that's ridiculous. Right? But that's the extremity of the emotion. And that's one way to really get the reader, I don't know. It's not quite an empathy because it is so extreme, but it's an understanding. It's more of a, I know where you are. This is like a flag. Like we can find you.
Yeah, I think what I remember from her movie and what I enjoyed about the movie was the similar, like you said, sort of extreme emotions. And these are emotions that if you're treating it like it's a real person or real character, they seem ridiculous. But if you're reading them as sort of an experience of your own emotions pushed to the extreme, like you can think about a time where you've met someone on a plane and you were like, oh my God, that was so fun. Like whether or not they were a stranger, you're like, we really hit it off. Well, imagine if you as a person, as a real person, like just didn't have the filter, or you weren't self-conscious, or you didn't talk yourself out of certain things. That's what feels like the through line with her characters. And that's why I know it's not Miranda July. I know your point, but it's like only a writer like Miranda July who must have experienced these kinds of feelings can push her characters that way too. Versus like a type of writer that might write like consistently controlled and down to earth and practical sort of characters. Yeah. You know, there's a certain sensibility that I feel like she infuses, and what it feels to me is just they're just willing to go there, and they don't have this like filter that tells them not to.
Just that scene where she gets a little bit of water on her skirt, so her solution is to wet the. It's like her concern isn't, oh, I got a little water on it. Her concern is it's a different color, and so in order to make the color match, I'll just get the whole thing wet. Which the discomfort of that, in real life, that would be the most uncomfortable thing you would do, is go sit back in a plane seat with a soaking wet skirt, right? Because it's the water is going to go everywhere. But that's not the concern, and it's never mentioned. The concern is the color. She just wants
it to all look,
That's like an absurdity. I don't want to say it's not real, because it is a real thing, right?
Yes.
That's what's so interesting about it. It's like, it's a real thing, but it's taken to an absurd place. And then to completely undermine it would just tell him the whole story. Like, this is what happened. This is why it's a different color. Like, his concern isn't, hey, you're dripping on me. His concern is, hey, your skirt's a different color, because he's in the same absurd place. Which I think that's definitely a style. That's definitely a narrative perspective. We talked in previous episodes about a story is saying, this is what it's like to be human. This is how human beings are. And this is definitely a way to present human beings in a over-the-top way to make us really see ourselves. If that makes sense. Yeah.
When I talked to my friend who did not like the novel, and which, like I said, was a lot like this sort of over-the-top infatuation with a stranger that lasts for the entirety of a book. For me, what sort of saved it from feeling like it wasn't a real character, like it wasn't something that could actually happen, were all these moments where the character, the writer, whoever, is taking a minute to just articulate these inner thoughts that the character has. And those inner thoughts and those beliefs are what feel really rooted and really real and really human. So to the example that you pointed out in the section that I read, she's contemplating killing her parents. She's like, would I kill my parents for this man? And like you said, that's what? No. You shouldn't be thinking about killing your parents. But also, oh my God, we've all thought about insane things like that, that we use as like a metric for something, right? Would I leave my family for this man? Whatever it is, whatever ridiculous thing. But like I said, her characters, or Miranda July, presents them without feeling self-conscious about it.
Oh yeah.
There's no excuses.
Yeah.
There's no, I know this is a bad thing to think, but I've always kind of wondered, would I kill? No, she just goes with it. Like her characters are just fully themselves. They don't worry or wonder, aside from like the stain on the skirt, right? About how they'll be perceived for feeling the way that they feel. Their feelings are big and loud and out there. And here, what's intoxicating about the exchange is, like you said, he is on the same playing field for whatever reason. He's on the same level as she is. He's also just, I'm going to say it, I'm going to feel it, I'm going to think, and I'm going to give you this number. And that's what makes for this drama that feels over the top and funny. Like, I can't help but smile when I read this because it's so ridiculous. He's like, I want you to memorize the last number. And she's like, okay, you know? And then she does.
So well done. And just the, what is the number? It's 4. Like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It can only be one of 10 options, right? And she's like, got it.
And then it's a talisman after that, which is just wonderful.
So she talks about like how even, I'm pretty sure there's a scene where she's like, even when I'm giving birth or when I'm nervous, she's like, I'm repeating this number 444, and everybody knows that it's my number and blah blah blah. There's like something about that that's really, really human and really like identifiable, right? We all have like a weird favorite number. Like my favorite number has been ingrained in me since I was 4. There's no significance other than I like it. So we know what it's like to have something like that, or to have a tick where you repeat something to comfort yourself.
That's the thing about this, is like everything in here is real.
Yeah.
It's true. It's just over the top. It's just exaggerated.
Yes. Yeah. And we do know these people. There are people like this. Yeah. That are this over the top, that are just some of the biggest characters that you know, the biggest people you know. And they also have like, they usually have wild swings one way or the other, right? She's full blown ecstatic in this piece. But in the book I'm talking about, it's long enough to see the same type of a character go to the other extreme, which is like extreme depression, you know? So they just feel big all around. And it's really fun to read it. I wrote down that she feels in this character feels like a female Walter Mitty. You know, and Walter Mitty, you kind of look at him and he's just daydreaming nonstop. You know, he's in his own internal world and people aren't totally privy to it. And so he's comes off a certain way. And here in this book, she's met her match, like her full blown visions and these daydreams that she's having. She's with someone that's having the same ones, and she's not afraid to kind of like feel them. And in this case, like act them out. There's literally scene right before I started reading where she bites him. He's like, do you want to bite me on the shoulder?
It's after he bit her.
Show me that you love me. Yeah, like he bites her and she's like, what's that? He's like, it's to show you I love you. There's two strangers, one of them a well-known celebrity of some sort, biting each other on an airplane, and they're both super into it. We don't even have to see reactions from like the flight crew or the other passengers to know that these people are just like in their own world.
Yeah, we do get that. We get like all the like looks and stuff.
But the way this main character categorizes them is like they don't get it.
Yeah, they're outsiders.
Yeah, she's like, they're watching, yes, and I would watch too, because what's happening here is incredible.
Their interactions are so brief. They're like so few. It's also an over the top reaction to such small. She's like, I'm fearful that I'm smelly, and he's like, well, I'll sniff you and see if you are, and then they fall in love. I mean, there is something about an airplane. It's like people who watch movies on airplanes, sometimes the movies feel more emotional than they would on the ground because of the altitude, the oxygen. There's something about that messes with your brain chemistry to just make you more emotional than normal.
Yeah. Okay, I have like two little sections that I'm like just looking at. They have nothing to do with anything. Nothing to do with anything you just said. But there's a paragraph where she's talking about, she says, my husband jokes about my lucky number, but I've never told him about Roy. You shouldn't underestimate a man's capacity for feeling threatened. You don't have to be a great beauty for men to come to blows over you. At my high school reunion, I pointed out a teacher I had once had a crush on, and by the end of the night, this teacher and my husband were wrestling in a hotel parking garage. My husband said that it was about issues of race, but I knew. Some things are best left unsaid. Said. So even this, first of all, the idea that your husband would attack your teacher in a parking garage after a reunion, that's wild. But then like her assumptions and the way she just drops it in, it's not of embarrassment to her. She's just kind of saying, you know, I'm familiar with this feeling that men, they want me. And the idea that I would be coveted by someone else would be too much for my husband. Like I was cracking up reading that section, because imagine one of your friends telling you like, listen, I know I'm no great beauty, but men really want me. They're always fighting over me. I don't think you would let your friend say that with a straight face, you know, without like calling them out or thinking to yourself like, oh my god, you're so full of yourself. But with this character, it's like, oh, you just love to hear it. You just love to read it, and for her to really believe it and not be embarrassed to tell you, to just state it as truth. And she's even like, you know, my husband says it was about issues of race, but I knew. She doesn't even believe other people's interpretations, because her sense of self is like, you know, this is delusions of grandeur in the dictionary. There's a picture of Miranda July in all of her books. And I love it. And then this next section is a good example right afterwards of the type of stuff that brings it back down to earth and makes it feel really human. It says, this morning I was cleaning out my jewelry box when I came upon a little slip of paper with pink curtains on it. I thought I had lost it long ago, but no, there it was, folded underneath a dried up carnation and some impractically heavy bracelets. I hadn't whispered four in years. The idea of luck made me feel a little weary now, like Christmas when you're not in the mood. And so there's also a moment where she sort of admits that even this lost its allure over the years, and something about life like kind of beat her down. She's not the kind of person that believes in these wild connections all the time. She's also had a normal life. I don't know. This character feels so like fully believable, because I think in some sense we all think of ourselves as, you know, the main character. We're all the most important person in the world. This is how you get by in life. This is just what it's like to be in your own brain. And this person has just dispensed of all of the criticism that might come with fully believing it and acting on it.
I think that's reminiscent of what fiction is. We talk about this all the time, like the idea of like having a theory and a proof, right? Like you have an idea and then every detail has to prove that idea. But if you approach life that way, then every detail is trying to prove your assumptions, right? Like they're fighting obviously because of the thing that I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
So it's almost metafictional in a certain way, which I think lends to the absurdity of things, obviously, you know, like that, like as you're pointing out, that is an absurd reaction. It is an over the top reaction. It is, I don't mean in not in a derogatory way, but like a self-centered way, right? Like a self-aggrandizing way, I think is the way you put it earlier. And that's all part of what the story is doing.
Yeah. There's something about the fact that she's so willing to embrace this concept of herself. She does it just recklessly. She just goes for it. This is what she believes about herself. And that makes her likable, and that makes it like a little funny. She doesn't seem like she's without humor about her own situation, you know? She doesn't seem like a pretentious, men fall in love with me everywhere I go. Because there's lines right next to them that say, you don't have to be a great beauty. She's like, listen, she has some grounding. She's realistic about certain things, but not about her feelings. She's like, listen, I know I'm not gorgeous, but men love me. And you can see her sort of like saying it that way, where she's like, she's amused, you know?
Did she say it was because she's tall?
She's like,
that's when she stretched her arms across. That's when before he bit her. Because she was like, look at, like, you have to be tall to have this wingspan or something like that.
Yeah, she says it like on the first page. When she realizes it's him and he's a celebrity and he falls asleep next to her on the flight, she says, sleep, little spy, sleep. He's actually not little, but we're all children when we sleep. For this reason, I always like to let men see me asleep early on in a relationship. It makes them realize that even though I am 5'11", I am fragile and need to be taken care of.
Yeah.
A man who can see the weakness of a giant knows that he is a man indeed. It's just so over the top. She's so convinced of her own interpretations of everyone else's thoughts about her. You know, she's like, I get it. I'm 5'11". I might be intimidating. So I sleep and then they love me. It's like, that's not why they love you, but she's convinced of it.
Did you think she died at the end? No, just kidding.
I was trying to remember how it ended.
She's about to stand up.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I kind of like that too.
It's funny because in a different story, the interpretation would be something happened at that moment. That's why it's like about to stand up and you never get the standing up part. But this story, I don't feel like lends itself to that kind of thought because it's something else. It's a different kind of story.
Yeah, this character has, you can tell, like a habit of dramatizing everything.
Yeah.
Everything is dramatic and over the top and scenic and cinematic and, you know, all these things. And in that moment, it's like this heavy, pregnant pause before she gets up to do the thing. And she's like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to get up. I'm going to keep living this life. I'm about to do it. I'll do it. And you kind of know, like, yeah, she was about to stand up, but like, did she? Will she? It's with great effort that she has to continue. It's so dramatic. Well, yeah, in that case. Yeah, it says, but I couldn't seem to stand up. Minutes passed, almost an hour. Now it was starting to get dark. Like, even that is just over the top. You know what I mean?
Yep.
She's literally paralyzed. Her cat is begging for dinner, and she's sitting there like, I was about to stand up. I was about to stand up. I don't know. Stories like this, I think, are really fun to read because, like I said, they tap into something that feels true of all people if you were to just kind of let go and believe it. And because of that, because of their willingness to do that, the story then gets permission and momentum to go places that a normal story can't and won't go. If this was a story about like a normal character and a normal reaction to things without this larger than life personality, it would be a story about how one time I sat next to a celebrity on a flight. And that's not an exciting story. It's something your friend tells you over dinner. It doesn't make for great fiction.
Yeah, I think my takeaway for the story is kind of what we were talking about before. Like, despite the absurdity of things, despite the over the topness of things, it's not merely that. It's rooted in some truth about human experience.
Right.
That is what the story is at some point. And it has to be so that we accept it, accept the absurdity of it. I mean, maybe it doesn't have to be, but that's part of it. That's part of what makes it work so well. And so the takeaway, I think, is just no matter what you're doing, what kind of experiment you're running in your fiction, what kind of point of view you have on things that you want to express, you have to make sure you ground it in some rooted truth that people can attach to and recognize.
I think about this sometimes where it's like, if I'm able to conceive of it, it must fall into that category. I don't know that as a human, that I can really come up with anything that isn't somehow believable, because I am a human and it feels somehow interesting enough to me. You know, I think that's why certain people can read Miranda July and just not get it or just not enjoy it. That's totally fine. Yeah. But I don't think that they necessarily read it and don't like it because they think to themselves, this could never happen. It could. It's just not something you would do, you know, but there are people like this that do whatever it is that comes to them, and they feel fully and they lean in and do some wild stuff for the plot, as they say.
Yeah, that's not quite what I think I was getting at.
I
do agree that there probably are people that do. There are people who have big emotions, and their emotions are overwhelming and just larger than you might expect. I happen to know some of them. But I think what makes the story bigger than that is that we recognize something in it of ourselves, even if we don't have those feelings. Otherwise, it's niche. And I don't think it's niche. I think it's universal. Like, all great fiction has something universal in it. I think it is great fiction because it has that universal thing in it. And so that's why my takeaway is, you can go crazy with your fiction, but find something universal to, like, kind of have it in your mind as, like, this is the thing. Although it's difficult as far as advice, like, if I were in the workshop, like, this is what you need to do. Because I don't think you teach someone to be over the top. They just are. And then, like you said, just by the nature of, like, how they see things and by the nature of being human, they're going to find human things to talk about. It might just be one of those things where you have to remind them, in order to speak to a larger, I don't want to say audience, but moment, to a larger idea that's not merely your own experience, you want to make sure that you're touching on something bigger than you just yourself.
Right.
And that is, like, human experience.
Yeah, I guess similarly, my takeaway is mostly, like, if you've thought it, just see what happens when you write it, you know?
Yeah.
If you've had a crazy thought where you think, you know, you met someone on an airplane and you really hit it off, well, for the sake of a short story, like, what happens if you were both on the same page, you know? Or even worse, if you were infatuated with someone you met on an airplane and they were not, you know? That's also interesting. But, like, what about having characters that just go for it? Whether it's that's how they are, or it's a character that leans into the things that you think about and feel and squash in yourself, you know? Like, who would you be if there wasn't that little voice in your head saying, people don't do that or act that way or think like that? People don't do that in polite society, sort of.
We had that as a takeaway, like, go with the thought that you would normally quash. And I don't remember what story that was for, but I don't feel like it was this kind of writing. It was something else.
Yeah, but something else.
It is a good reminder that fiction is where things should be bigger than real life, because you are trying to dive into deeper things.
Yeah. Like I said, this would be such a boring story if the affair was all in her head. It's so fun that we get to see it play out. And then for her to carry, like you said, this number like a talisman for her whole life, and then to dial the number one day. We also want that to happen. And then it does.
Disappointing that that nanny moved on, but you know.
Yeah, right. She never did.
Can you imagine the reunion at the end of this story? Totally that same absurd over-the-topness. Like, he's on that TV show now, and like, what's going
to
happen?
It's just so fun. And then you might think to yourself, well, that's a ridiculous concept. And then might I remind you that this is a story that is published on the internet. People read it and enjoy it. You know what I mean? Like, there's proof of concept in this type of a experiment. People do enjoy it.
If he's as over-the-top as she is, then he took that nanny's phone number just in case she might call eventually. He's been holding on to it. Like, now it's programmed to his cell phone and goes directly to him on set where he is. And he's been waiting. It's like the only person in the world who has that number now is she.
Yeah, it's sad because she was the only one that could contact him and she didn't, you know, he didn't have a way to contact her or else he might have caved first.
There you go.
So sad. Yeah, the lesson here is to exchange numbers both ways. All right, thanks, guys.
If you enjoyed this episode, consider joining our Patreon. Your support helps us keep the show running. Find out more at patreon.com/whyisthisgoodpodcast. You can also subscribe to our monthly newsletter at napleswritersworkshop.com.